There's these great studies they used to, you may have seen these, into what makes a successful person, right? So they looked at all these people that, you know, got made loads of money, and they looked at qualities that they have that make them different from, like, sort of ordinary people. And it was, you know, they were tenacious, they didn't listen to advice, they went their own way. And then someone had a really smart idea of looking at unsuccessful people and seeing what qualities they have. Turns out they have exactly the same set of qualities. They don't listen to people, tenacious, they go their own way. The only thing that differentiates between a successful and unsuccessful person in the two tails of the distribution is luck.
From PHI Media, I'm Gordon Thane, and this is Designing Happier Lives, episode 211, What Health Economics Tells Us About Happiness.
You're listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for all things public health and global health, from the Sustainable Development Goals to the social determinants of health, as well as interesting dialogues about the diverse career opportunities that exist in these fields. Remember to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so other people like you can benefit from our content.
I spend a lot of time thinking about health, well-being, and the things we need in our lives to feel good. Yes, it's a part of my job, but there's more to it than that. A lot of times when I ask myself, my friends, my family, or loved ones the question, if you could have one thing, anything in the world, what would that be? You might be surprised to learn that it's not all about having all the money in the world. The things that people seem to wish or hope for, at a minimum, are health, peace, and happiness. We as human beings are able to recognize the importance that these factors play in our lives, and yet our actions are often in contradiction. The problem here is that we often tell ourselves a different narrative. What you're about to hear is chapter 1 of 3, where LaShawn and myself sit down with Dr. Paul Dolan to try to get to the bottom of all of this. Dr. Dolan is a professor of behavioral sciences at the London School of Economics, with research interests mainly in human behavior, happiness, and relationships between them, particularly as they apply to policy. Before he was a professor, though, he'd always been curious about learning, navigating the unpredictable journey of luck, and was the first in his family to go to university. Professor Dolan, welcome to the Public Health Insight Podcast. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Awesome.
Yeah, welcome.
So we actually had the pleasure a few years ago of speaking with Dr. Corey Keyes about mental health and the two continuum model of mental health and that sort of thing. So when we had the opportunity to set something up with you, talking about happiness specifically, we were very excited because in my personal life anyway, there's sort of two things that people wish or hope to have at a minimum. And it's usually something to do with health and something to do with happiness. And you're talking essentially about those two things. So we're very excited to dive into this. But before we do, we want to learn a little bit more about you. Right. So one of the interesting things that I read about you is that you were the first in your family to go to university. And then after that, you went to university and you studied economics at Swansea. And then after that, you end up in behavioral sciences. So what do we need to know about you and this journey to understand you that now sits in front of us today?
Well, okay, great. Thank you. Well, it always makes me happy to talk about myself. So that's always a nice place to start. So I can tell you a very good story about how my life has unfolded, but actually there were lots of chance and randomness along the way that won't make it anywhere near as coherent as it will sound when I tell the story about it. But you're right, I was the first to go to university. I was just very lucky to be clever, I think. I've made a point about luck throughout, actually. So I was just lucky. And I found learning relatively straightforward and went to university and left after my undergraduate degree to go and do chartered accountancy. And two things happened during that time. One is I realised I was not cut out to be a chartered accountant. Second, I'm sorry for all those chartered accountants listening, but that wasn't for me.
So you did all those exams?
No, I got out quickly. I think one of the key one of the key things to happiness, if you're thinking about quitting something, you should probably just go on and do it. So I did that. even though I wasn't working in happiness at the time, I was following some of the happiness tips that I might say about 30 years later. And secondly, I actually realized that I quite like learning. And so I went back to university with almost like a changed mindset, really. I just, having sort of breezed through everything to that point, I really worked hard. I really felt privileged, actually, to enjoy learning, and lucky to then get a job in academic research where I was paid to learn. I was paid to think. I was paid to write. I was paid to read. I was paid to teach. I mean, all those things that none of my family or friends had ever had any experience or opportunity of. And so I felt like I should probably give it my best shot, actually, you know, almost as if it wasn't a burden. Like, it never felt burden to me, but it was something that I sort of owed to myself and to everyone else to kind of make the best shot of it, I think. So I did pretty well in health economics. As you say, I trained as an economist, so I worked as a health economist for the first tranche of my academic career, and was very successful at that. I, you know, good papers published relatively quickly in good journals, got a chair very early, very young, and made a contribution to the valuation of health.
We came here to find out why we say we want happiness, but we spend our time doing things that we don't particularly enjoy as much. So why are we talking about health economics? Isn't that the thing where people find out about what healthcare costs and what drugs cost? Once upon a time, I thought that too. But it turns out, it's much more than that. And it can actually teach us a lesson about everyday life and why we make certain decisions.
I worked as a health economist valuing states of health and illness to inform policy decisions, so that when we're thinking about scarcity and we can't use the same dollar twice, that we use it to best effect. Was measuring the benefits. It's relatively straightforward to measure the costs, although not that easy, but easier to look at how much interventions in healthcare cost. But what do you get for them? What are the benefits that come? So I spent my early career valuing benefits, and gave me a sort of long-standing interest, although my research interest may have moved around a little bit, especially for an academic. Often academics get like narrower and narrower into one field for their whole lives. I probably get a bit bored too quickly to do that. Although I've sort of moved around a little bit, the one thing that's held, like almost like the glue that's held my academic life together, is a keen interest in how you measure and value stuff that's important to life but not captured by markets. You know, the stuff that makes life worth living, and how you can value that for the purposes of informing individual and policy decisions. So, and one of the things that happened to me was I won a prize for my contribution to health economics, and it gave me some money to buy myself out of some teaching and to go to some conferences. And I noticed an Economics of Happiness conference in Milan. And I thought, Milan, happiness, that sounds like fun. So I went to the conference, and that was life-changing, really, in a way. I suppose I met two men there, Richard Layard, who is a happiness professor at LSE, who we met, and after a few chats was very, very keen to try and get me to move to LSE, which I did a few years later. And Danny Kahneman, who is author of Thinking Fast and Slow, Nobel Prize winner in economics, psychologist by background, had a serendipitous meeting sitting next to him on a bus ride to the conference dinner. And he'd just won the Nobel at that time. And in the 10 minutes we were on the bus ride, he invited me to Princeton to go and spend some time working with him, which I did. And that kind of sucked me into behavioural science, I guess, like the interface of economics and psychology. And particularly into happiness and how we might more directly measure the impact of health states and other conditions in people's lives on how they feel. And so that's really been the last, like, not the last bit, because I hope there's still a bit more to come, but the latest piece of my academic life has been looking at how measures of well-being directly assessed through self-report largely can be used to inform individual and policy decisions.
And is that what you meant by getting lucky?
It is. We have a very strong narrative in Western liberal democracies, and particularly in the US, actually more than anywhere else, we have this real narrative of effort and hard work and people being successful through their agency. And it's a good story, but I'm not sure how accurately it represents how things turn out for you. There's these great studies they used to do, you may have seen these, into what makes a successful person, right? So they looked at all these people that, you know, got made loads of money, and they looked at qualities that they have that make them different from, like, sort of ordinary people. And it was, you know, they were tenacious. They didn't listen to advice. They went their own way. And then someone had a really smart idea of looking at unsuccessful people and seeing what qualities they have. Mm. Turns out they have exactly the same set of qualities. They don't listen to people, tenacious. They go their own way. The only thing that differentiates between a successful and unsuccessful person in the two tails of the distribution is luck. But the reason that we don't like it is because it has no agency. People will say things like, you make your own luck. Well, I mean, you could put yourself in the way of opportunities, but you can't make randomness. I mean, that's just impossible. And just to give you another example of this, I think is a really, really nice story, is of an experiment where you have Monopoly, don't you, in Canada? I'm sure you do. You know the game anyway, right? And so you obviously try and buy the best locations, put houses on and so on, and win money. What they did in this experiment was to allocate cards at the beginning of the game and allocate them in such a way that the cards were just overwhelmingly loaded in one person's favour. So you're going to win the game, right? But you knew in advance that you were given the best cards. Then you win. But then when you tell a story about how you win, it's, well, I knew where to put the houses on, and I knew when to put the hotels on. And, you know, it's like we're very good. And that explanation is how we explain a lot of what happens to us in his life. So I'm very reticent and reluctant to claim this. I mean, I could tell a story about coming from a working class background where it was tough and I worked hard, and all of that may be to some degree true, but it's also very true that I was lucky.
As you can probably tell, Dr. Dolan is very passionate about health economics and behavioral sciences. And like any good scientist looking to make the science behind everyday concepts more accessible, he saw an opportunity to do so by hosting a TV show. What he learned from that experience was that it was quite challenging to convey scientific concepts in a way that captures the audience's attention while staying true to the information, especially when the platform itself has the primary goal of entertainment. And well, I'll let him tell you the rest.
Tell us about you were a TV presenter on a couple of different shows.
Oh God, you didn't tell me you were going to ask me about this. I'm going to have to hang up there.
Yeah,
well, I mean they weren't.
my wife and I were up till 3 o'clock talking about that.
Oh mate, so honestly,
I have a famous person.
Mate,
you should not be.
You should not be spending your time talking to your wife at 3 a.m. about me on TV shows. we need to talk about your marriage, mate.
Fair enough.
But yeah, no, I did. I found them quite. Well, not challenging so much in the recording of them, but it's very, everything's in the edit, isn't it, with telly? And, well, actually, everything's in the edit here. I mean, you can make me sound lovely or nasty depending on what you edit in and out, right? So you do a lot. I was hoping to record programs that were more like getting the science across to people in a more accessible way. But those programs became quite sanitized of that and just went for the sort of easier market, of making programs. You can make science entertaining. I don't think that they're mutually exclusive, but I think in my judgment, they were missed opportunities to make science more accessible. So I'd be open for doing TV again, but I'd like to have a little bit more say, or someone have more say in the edit that's more committed to getting the science delivered. Because I think we can. That's actually one of my, if you want to talk about ambitions, that's very naturally led into one of my ambitions throughout that life, because it's been very cerebral till now, you know, like telling you stories about measuring benefits and impacts and so on. But I'm very passionate about all of those things too, but particularly passionate about getting the ivory tower out into the street.
With each of our guests, we like to lighten the conversation with our Insight Blitz segment, where we throw out a wide range of seemingly random questions or statements to get their instant reactions and responses. In this case, we explore a few things, from Paul's opinions on self-help and nonfiction books, his opinion on social media, to reflecting on one of his most memorable interactions he's ever had with a person. LaShawn kicks off the segment. Up next.
It's similar to what we're really doing at Public Health Insight. You know, there's so much out there in the evidence and peer-reviewed journals and so much research being done, but how do we get that in the hands of people that can actually use that information, right? I want to move us along a bit and talk a bit about an interesting segment that we have on our podcast. So this is what Gordon was mentioning, bit of rapid fire.
This is making me nervous, man.
I want to take you into our... Don't be nervous. It's all good. All good. So we're going to bring you into a segment that we call Inside Blitz, and we're going to ask you a bunch of different questions or read some statements, and you'll do your best to provide brief responses, and you can elaborate if you're feeling it. But are you ready?
Anyone who says don't be nervous is always definitely when you should definitely be nervous, right? So I'm absolutely ready and nervous. Let's go.
That's okay. Let's see how it goes. All right. So what is your favorite thing to do in your spare time?
Well, I go to the gym a lot, and I like going clubbing, and sometimes it's nice to spend time with my two kids. But that's probably no, they're actually getting, I always do team. I've actually written quite a lot about how children don't make people happy, but mine do from time to time. But yeah, I like the gym, and that's probably something that I've done most consistently and most often over the last 30 years.
Amazing. Wow. Which would you prefer, being outdoors in the heat or the cold?
Mate, cold all day long.
Oh, why is that? You should come to Canada.
I should actually live in Canada. I could probably live there without a coat. I hate the heat, man. I mean, honestly, it kills me when they do the news, like when they do the news reports and they say, oh, you know, the weather's going to be lovely. It's going to be like 30 degrees. And I'm like, mate, that is boiling hot. I don't deal with the heat. One of my PhD students said once, if you want to win an argument against Paul, just turn the heating up in the room. It's like my kryptonite. It just turns me to jelly. So cold, easy. Next one.
All right, cool. A memorable movie or TV show that you watched recently?
Succession. Easy.
Okay, I got to check it out. What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten?
I don't know, because I think this comes back to something really important I've sort of started to touch on about happiness, and we can maybe get into it a bit more though, is the role of narratives and stories. They're very, very important in our lives.
Yeah.
But insofar as someone can live a life story free, and I'm not going to delude myself that it's story free, but with a minimum amount of narrative playing in how I should live, I think I'm that person. Like, I don't feel that I'm doing things because I have a script or a story about the things that I ought to be doing or not doing. And so that, again, that question does sort of play into that to some degree. Because, like, if you just bounce around doing stuff that gives you pleasure and purpose, like, you have it, like, what almost like, what else is there? You know, it's like you don't have to have plans and strategies and goals. I mean, I'm you know, sort of putting it a bit too simply and a bit too crudely, and of course you do have to some extent, but the fact that I don't really seem to have listened to people that have even given me good or bad advice is probably consistent with that general point about not living too much in stories.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll get into a bit more about the stories and narratives in a bit. Social media, good or bad?
See, I like this now. I like this when people say, because of course the answer is somewhere in between. Bad. I know, of course it's good as well, but yeah.
I thought you would say good, because some of the things I've read, you were talking about the flipping it on its head with, it helps to kind of flip those social narratives for certain groups. So I'm interested in hearing.
It does. No, you're right. And of course that is the more nuanced answer, but in a choice between good or bad, I would say that the suggestive evidence, and of course, this, you know, we don't have randomized controlled trials and all the things that we'd love to have in academia, but the suggestive evidence is that amongst young people, that their well-being is lower, and a possible contributory factor is social media. Let's put it like that. So, good or bad? If I have to pick one, bad.
What is one of the most memorable interactions you've had with someone in relation to your work?
Well, I was sort of, I suppose I was primed to mention Danny Kahneman, because that bus ride was, you know, life changing for me. And we just had a quick chat about valuing health, right? And how some of using some of these measures that rely on people's imaginations of how future health states would impact upon them is probably leads to misguided judgments about the severity of those states. But I also think that the conversations that I have with junior colleagues, and actually the first time, probably the first, this is going to be a moment for me in my life. You won't care much about this, but a moment for me where I might actually praise my kids, or at least make a comment that is not derogatory about how miserable children make you, because I really am enjoying, we've got two teenage kids, and I really am enjoying some of the sort of the questions of the moral philosophy or moral psychology, you know, that kind of informs a lot of my work. I'm really enjoying having those conversations with two kids that see the world differently. Really interestingly, that the lenses through which they look at the world are different. And I'm really enjoying that difference as much as the conversations with them themselves. So yeah, so from Danny to my kids, I think that's one of the great privileges, again, of being me. That sounds a bit grand, doesn't it? But you know, one of the great privileges is being able to, I think, and this is something I learned through my journey, or maybe I just had it in me, is being able to talk to anybody, whatever their profession and whatever their background and whatever their experience is, and feel comfortable in rooms that contain enormous difference from one moment to the next. And that's where you get those really rich conversations, I think, by being able to speak across class divides, social divides, generational divides, because actually age is one of the biggest, you know, factors that we discriminate on the basis of, right? Or at least our circle of friends, you know, don't have all the ages in them. So I think all of those characteristics by which we differ, I think I feel quite lucky to be comfortable in all of those environments.
And that kind of sets it up well for, I think you're working on a book around how to talk to different people with different opinions. So that kind of, from what you were saying, it kind of lends pretty well to that.
Do you know, it's interesting. Some people, like lots of academics, research is informed by various things. I mean, I can't speak for other academics, but my work has been heavily informed, especially in this last decade or so, by intuition and observation and introspection, experience, or whatever you want to call it. I got into, we might talk about happiness by design, pleasure and purpose. I got into the pleasure and purpose principle by kind of observation. I got into the social narratives because I'm really interested in how constraining sometimes these stories can be for people to lead lives that would be authentic and, you know, happier for them. And I'm really interested in how we find it difficult to listen to people that disagree with us. Now, again, I'm not setting myself up as some superhero who, you know, doesn't get affected by or get angry or upset by people who are clearly wrong. But I went into academia because I like a good argument, like a nice heated debate, a nice discussion informed by evidence, difference of opinions, different value judgments, different lenses through which we look at the world. And I've been noticing over the last, you know, decade or so how that has become increasingly difficult. And I'd like to try and find ways in which we can make it easier for us to be more tolerant, I suppose. Not to necessarily change our mind, not to reach a consensus, not to defuse any passion, but just for us to be a little bit more respectful that other people can look at the world differently.
Great. So that brings us to the end of the Insight Blitz segment. That was a lot of fun. Back over to you, Gordon.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're off the hot seat now. At least
wasn't too bad, right?
Coming up next, the second episode in this three-part miniseries with Dr. Dolan, where we talk about the science behind happiness and why you hate your job, but go around telling everyone that you love it. That's next time on Designing Happier Lives on the Public Health Insight Podcast. This show was edited by me, Gordon Thane, with additional editing from LaShawn Benedict. Sound design and mixing by myself and LaShawn Benedict. The original music from The Music Room, composed by Tom Fox, licensed from Johnny Harris. The cover art design for our show by LaShawn Benedict. The Public Health Insight Podcast is produced by PHI Media. Thank you for listening to the Public Health Insight Podcast, your go-to space for informative conversations, inspiring community action. If you enjoy our podcast, be sure to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. See you in the next one.